Well, hello, hello, my friends. It's me, your Broadway buddy, Ben Cameron, and you're back here with me on the Broadway cast with iHeartRadio Broadway. Listen, you're going to want to dust off your funny bone for today's episode because you are going to need it. Now, for as long as theaters existed, people have gathered together to forget their troubles for an hour or two. Doodly-doo. Anyone? Pippin? Anywho, if you've had a tough week at work, let's say Linda in accounting is up your butt about purchase orders, or Dan in sales really wants you to check out some herbal supplements he swears by, Les Mis may not be your theatrical escape of choice. We as humans want to laugh. We need to laugh. And that's why musical comedies have dominated Broadway for generations. Even Les Mis needs a little levity. Paging Madame Thénardier. We'll get into that a little bit later on in the episode. But from Brody Book of Mormon to Spamalot producers, Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, and every rib tickler before and after, nothing lifts the spirit like a good laugh. It takes a very special performer to take that funny to the next level, though. I remember rehearsing for Wicked and watching in awe as Kristen Chenoweth pulled trick after hilarious trick out of her sleeves, each funnier than the last. Now, it's not enough to just toss, hit a high note and call it a day. Comedy is not for the faint of heart. It's a very specific art. It takes delivery. It takes timing. In fact, a lot of people say it's a science. Well, you don't need to take my word for it. Our guests today are some of Broadway's most talented scene-stealing ladies. We have Loud and Proud, Leslie Margarita from Matilda, the sexiest of mice from Mean Girls and the upcoming Griswold Broadway Vacation, which I giggle even saying it out loud, Kate Rockwell, and in-demand super spelling bee diva, the one and only Lisa Howard. I want to make a disclaimer before we get into the discussion. I am in no way pigeonholing these women. They are all brilliant, dramatic, and quote-unquote straight actors on every level. But boy, oh boy, do they know how to make you pee your pants. Well, maybe that's a me problem. I love these women, and you are going to love the funny ladies of Broadway. Now, before we get on with the show, I want to remind you to make sure you subscribe to the show so you never miss an episode. You can follow us on social media at The Broadway Cast on all platforms. Very, very easy. Share us with your friends, rate us, review us, and if you'd like to support us further, join our Patreon family, and we're going to give you behind-the-scenes exclusive content that nobody else gets. You can find the link in the liner notes. All right, let's get ready to laugh with the funny ladies of Broadway. Let's go on with the show.
Oh my God, all right. I'm already having way too much fun and we haven't even started the show. So I just got to introduce you to these ladies that we are so fortunate to get to talk to today. I'll start with the fabulous Kate Rockwell from Bring It On the Musical, from Mean Girls. She's currently out of town working on the Griswold's Broadway Vacation, which I cannot believe exists. Hi, Kate. How are you?
Hi, good morning, Ben. It's morning to me still. I'm West Coast, so it's morning. I didn't get up at noon, I promise.
I believe you. Who possibly would? Me, for most of my adult life. How's it going with the Griswolds?
It's good. We actually just yesterday finished our first week of tech, so I've seen double of all of you right now, but it's going really well. You know, this show is going into it, like seeing the designs of everything, we were like, oh, this is going to be like a really big show. Like it's very large. Then we got here to Seattle. We're doing our out of town at the Fifth Avenue, and we saw the marquee for the first time. Like, it's massive. Everything is so beautiful. I wish I was allowed to share. I didn't ask ahead of time. I should have been asked if I was allowed to like share a photo or something, but it is stunning. It's so, so pretty. Every new thing that comes out, we're like, wow, this is pretty. It's really exciting. Say that again.
And like a legitimate show, like a great big show.
Oh no, we're doing a Broadway musical. It's a Broadway musical.
That's so exciting. I can't believe that exists at all. Once again, I just think that is the craziest, most wonderful overdue thing I've ever heard of in my entire gay life. Also joining us today, oh my God, from Matilda, Dames at Sea, and so much more, Olivier Award winner, Leslie Margarita.
Hey. Woo!
Leslie, I have to ask you, yes. you're doing Dames at Sea.
Again, yes, again. A reboot. A reboot.
It's a reboot.
Dames at Sea.
They're very in a reboot. You posted something on Twitter that I absolutely loved the other day that had something to do with, and you'll fill me in on this, and all of us, somebody saying, oh my God, you were almost, you were better than the girl on Broadway. And you were like, I was the girl
this
on
woman,
Broadway. Tell us the story.
Yeah. Yeah. At the opening night of Dames at Sea, a woman, an elderly, lovely lady, came up, she's like, I see so many shows on Broadway. I see at least six a year. And I was like, oh, great. And she goes, I saw this on Broadway. You're better than the girl that I saw on Broadway. I never missed a show in the entire run. So it was, I didn't want to correct her and be like, no, that was me. I just went, oh, thank you. I'm a big fan of hers. So that's a big, big compliment. Big shoes to fill.
You have literally outdone yourself. You've outdone yourself.
Right.
But thankfully it was that. Can you imagine if she was like, you were almost as good, which is what I would have expected. But yeah, that was the best thing ever of life to happen to me.
I wish you would have better. Said something like, well, thank God, because I hate that bitch.
Something. She's awful.
Thank God. Do you guys know the story about fabulous, wonderful, classy icon that is Dee Hody? Do you know her story about Follies? She did that Follies at Paper Mill that was probably 15 years ago, but they made a double disc cast album of the Paper Mill production, and it was meant to go to Broadway before this last revival, blah, 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 blah. Well, Dee Hody did the whole Lucy and Jesse number in the show on the recording. She's fabulous, as we all know. She went to audition for another production of Follies and was auditioning in the room. And the person behind the table said, you know what? Can you do it more like the woman on the recording from Paper Mill? And she had to stand in front of them and say, I am. The woman on the recording from
Paper Mill. No.
So.
Oh, the worst.
See, I got lucky then. I improved.
I think that has to be one of those like, milestones of I've made it. When people are comparing you to yourself without knowing it.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That I just also means someone much. Didn't do their research, right? Somebody needed to like Google. If you love the album that much,
didn't read the program.
Maybe Google it and like find out who did it so that when that person comes in the room, you don't tell them to impersonate themselves.
Well, especially when we're talking about stars of a certain level that are like marquee stars of this particular program. You know, you think you'd want to. Speaking of great big stars, we're also joined by the luscious, the fabulous, one of the great, great voices in our industry from the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee, Escape to Margaritaville. And so there's like nine other Broadway credits we could list, including Priscilla and blah, 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 on and on. Lisa Howard.
Yay! Happy to be here.
I'm so happy that you're here. You're in your closet. Welcome back into the closet. That's where we're
headed. Yeah, back in.
That's where we're heading in this world, back into the Handmaid's Tale sort of thing. Back into the closets with you. You just wrapped up your run as Madame Morrible in the Wicked National Tour.
Yes, I did. I'm there. Madame Morrible.
we've achieved Madame Morrible. You are too young, too gorgeous to be a Madame Morrible. Yes. But what was the experience like out on the road?
Honestly, I loved it. And as a mom of two, you know, it was real hard to be away from the kids for 6 months, 7 months. I love doing the show. You know, you saunter on, move the plot forward, get a couple laughs and go out again.
Absolutely.
And you have big, you know, sleeves and Bell to walk sleeves, with.
Which become another character on totally. Stage. With those costumes.
Yeah.
I'm going to put you like hard on the spot. And you're not going to be able to answer me, but okay. I have a prediction. I have a feeling. Are they bringing you to the Broadway production in a couple months? Is that what's going to happen?
I mean, not that I know of, but
I have a hunch. That's the course here.
I would not be mad about that course. I think it all kind of depends on what happens with the next project that I'm working on.
Oh. Which is what?
Which is 42nd Street, Goodspeed Opera House.
Oh, fantastic.
With Randy Skinner.
Oh, well, that's...
Randy Skinner! I mean, Randy went from us at Dames to them.
Yes. Oh. Yeah, right from you to us. And it's so fun. We're in like the third week of rehearsals.
Oh, great. Oh, you didn't have any rest. No rest for the wicked, I guess.
Zero.
Pretty har-har. So let me ask you, getting into this, my friends, how do you all know each other in this business? Have you intersected in shows, concerts, diners? Where do you guys know each other from? Or you all meeting for the first time. I can't believe that, if that's true, is it?
No. No.
Well, Leslie and I have done some stuff together, but nothing that's ever made it to a stage. Like, never, it's only like the developmental things. They put us in a room together and then immediately get nervous and go, maybe we can do another meeting.
I believe that.
Bad news together. And then Lisa and I, we...
Concerts,
yeah.
For sure. That's we'll meet you on the concert stage while everyone kind of says hello, but then also disappears into their brain to try to remember the lyrics that they have to remember to get the song out one time. Benefit lyric syndrome, as I like to call it.
Oh, it's the worst.
Like, hi, yeah, great to see you. I've got to get this 4-minute piece out, and I learned it this morning. Booked for the concert for months. I know.
Yeah.
That's how I do it. All right. Let's do a little game. We like to play games here and warm up. This isn't so much... Well, I guess it's a game. It's also an exercise. We're going to do the most basic of improv games. We're going to do some telling the story, which very simply, we are going to round robin over this Zoom, which will be interesting, one word at a time, and create a fantastical story that hopefully will make some sense. I play this with a lot of eight-year-olds. It always goes terribly. So anything.
And you expect it to go differently now?
Right. I can't guarantee anything.
I'm excited to find out. Now, because it's hard to go around robin virtually here, I will also play the game. I'll start, pass it to Kate, to Leslie, to Lisa.
After Ben.
All right, great. So let's just assume that once upon a time is a given. Yeah, once upon a time, there
was
a
bird
named
Paul.
Who
sat
upright
most
of the time.
Hey.
Well, let's be honest. We all knew that's where we were going.
Suddenly,
Paul
looked
ill
and
frail
to
his husband.
So,
Carl
said,
girl,
I
think
you
might
have to
go
away.
Oh, that's tough. That's tough. Carl's a bitch.
Carl.
All right, great. Let's stop it there. That's great. Lisa, why don't you start?
That went dark.
Went really dark.
Funny ladies went dark.
I feel like Carl needs to look a little deeper inside of Carl's self. I mean, just a little bit of scoliosis and falls out of his ear.
Bird flu.
Listen, they go fast, you know? It's like this with the birds. They just...
Absolutely. Well, and listen, gay relationships too. But it's, and then, I'm at, that's double gay. Gay birds?
Right. You know what I mean?
Paul and Carl. Oh, man. I'm sorry to hear about them.
Yeah. So let's go in reverse order. Lisa, Leslie, Kate, me.
Okay. Once upon a time, we
went
up
dream.
I'm sorry. Did you say dream?
Stream.
Oh, stream.
Like salmon would.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. With
inner tubes
around
7 o'clock.
Suddenly,
my cocktail
fell
into
the
river.
and
disappeared.
I
cried
inconsolably
for
hours
and hours
and hours
more
than
a gay bird.
Which, W-H-I-C-H, which,
incidentally,
is what
I am.
Yes, thank you.
Oh my God, this is what happened. This is what happened to Paul.
Yes. Oh,
Paul got literally up the river. Oh my gosh. And what he needed, was, and what he needed more than that inner tube was his cocktail.
Exactly.
Goes out
and
to
upstream.
All
upstream.
Upstream, no less. Oh, well, that was inspired. Everyone got 25 points. So that's great. 25 points for everybody. I want to get into, just in a Cliff's Notes kind of way, I want you to tell me, if you would, when we got bit by the theater bug. Was it in our youth? Were we children? Was it later on? When? What did we see that turned us onto this? Who inspired us? What was the, how did you become you? Leslie.
I was a child. I started dancing when I was 4 because I was so hyper that my mom didn't know what to do with me. And then my family, we saw a production of Annie in San Francisco. And one of the girls messed up her steps. And I was like, oh, no. And then they were having auditions to like replace kids. And I was like, I'm going to do that. My dad went and got like a little audition thing. And they were like, don't, you've never sung. You're not going to get this. And I did. So I was like a child at 8 and was like, yeah, this is easy. Little did I know.
Well,
I'm off to the races then. Did you do this in, was high school a thing?
Yeah. I never stopped performing. Like I, even when I was in high school, I would do the high school shows, but then I would still do like CLOs, professional shows. But then I also worked, at theme parks.
Oh yeah.
All through high school. I would perform at the theme parks on the weekends. Great America.
How old do you have to be to work there? Do you, can
15.
You be?
Like if you have a work permit at 15, yeah, I think I started at 16 though. I was 16 and then, started and doing then, the shows.
And then the Disney and then the award winning theater worldwide.
Yeah. I literally went to UCLA because I knew I had a job at Disneyland performing.
How wonderful.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was amazing. That was like,
that's a no brainer.
That was my dream. I was like, I've made it.
I had that dream at one point. I was like, if I could ever perform at a Disney park, then look out world. All me all the time. Kate, when did you fall in love with it?
I was a kid too, although I was really little. I was like 6 maybe, I think. And my parents took me to see the touring production of Cats. And
classic.
Not to put a date on this, but like 1990. And that particular tour, the Cats did a lot of stuff in the aisles, and I was on an aisle and there was a cat, you know, this was like a Saturday matinee, right? Like, or a Sunday matinee. It must've been like an early show. And that this cat came down and like got up in my face and like pawed at my face and like, not like didn't like clap, but like was like kind of messing with me. And I was like, best day of my life, and I cried. And then now that I'm an actor, because somebody, some 22-year-old who was out on the Cats tour, found the kid in the aisle and was like probably trying to save themselves through the Saturday matinee in Cincinnati, Ohio, and was like, this kid looks like an easy target, and now it's their fault that I'm here. So if we ever find that cat, I want them to know.
I want to find that cat.
I blame them.
That cat was probably, if it was a matinee, that cat was probably so hungover and angry.
That's what I said. I was like, that cat had the worst hangover. It was just like, the longer I play with the kid, the less I have to do the onstage.
Yeah. Like, this cat smells like grandpa. What? That's the name of my book, incidentally. Lisa Howard, what was the hook for you?
I think for me, now this is gonna date me even more than you, but I would literally sit and listen to albums of musicals in our dining room. I thought that was the coolest things. I loved movie musicals. I would sit and Annie and Grease and The Sound of Music and all of that. I just sat and I just loved them. I mean, and this is like elementary school, you know, third, fourth, fifth grade. And I mean, that was kind of it. And then I started taking voice lessons and singing. And really what got me into performing was doing show choir. I did show choir in Ohio. And then in high school, I did the, you know, like my high school shows. I didn't go to a performing arts high school or anything, but it really started with those albums. And I would sit and look at the jackets and the pictures and listen to all the songs. And that was it.
Lisa, where in Ohio are you from?
Akron.
Oh, okay. I'm from Cincinnati.
Okay. I went to school in Cincinnati.
I went to school in Cleveland and worked at the Carousel Dinner Theater a lot. So I know Akron well, too.
Oh my gosh, that's Carousel. I worked there as a non-equity performer once in a chorus line. I was one of the cut dancers. Thank you very much.
I think that's very inspiring for those dancers and singers out there. You can do it.
You can do that
chorus line at the Beef and Boards.
Yes.
I think Carousel Dinner Theater made the Beef and Boards look very fancy.
Oh.
That true? I've never been to the Beef and Boards, but it's so hilarious to be able to say, and I know it exists, that I want to throw it in every chance I can.
The fact that it still exists versus the Carousel Dinner Theater, which does not, me that the Carousel Dinner Theater was lower ranked than the Beef and Boards.
But Beef and Boards, I mean, you're really getting a lot there. That's like a 1-2 combo at Sizzler. Beef and
Boards. Hope they finish it up with a Peach Melba, because every dinner theater I've ever worked at, and there have been many, always ended with a Peach Melba. And I just want the Beef and Boards to have that too. Otherwise, I feel like they're not giving a good experience.
The Peach, what is a Peach Melba?
I don't know. It's a dessert of a different generation.
Like a cobbler?
I think it's like a cobbler, but it's like in a bowl. And there's ice cream on it. But I never had one because they wouldn't give us the desserts because we were working. So it's not like I've ever had it.
So sad.
So gross.
Yeah. Do you love the experience of going to a dinner theater where at intermission, the actors you've been watching on stage for act one come in to check on your meal? Yeah.
No.
Oh yeah, I've been to-
Is that a thing?
Yeah,
they perform. In the Midwest, that's a big thing.
They come and they then check on you. And then after the show, they come and clear your plates. It's like, they are on the clock. You're like, you're doing so well.
Multi-talented.
That's really, that's the work. No. We talk about doing the work, that's the work. Tell me about, as young performers, tell me about the first time you remember getting a laugh. When you went, what's that reaction and what's that doing to me? Because I feel like there's a couple of those in my life that I went, whatever that is, this laughter I'm getting from these people, I am hooked on that. Like a junkie. And then, of course, you know, I'm an attention whore from way back. When do you guys have it? Doesn't have to be your very first one.
Go ahead, Leslie.
No, as a little kid, I my mom made me this E.T. costume, and somebody was doing like an E.T. number and a dance recital. And I remember being in this costume and people laughing. And I remember that. That was like the earliest. I was like and five.
Was there a reaction of like, I like that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't know that I knew that. I thought it was cool that people thought what I was doing was fun. I don't know. I don't remember.
I do want to know if that exists on film. The E.T. dance number.
My mom. Yeah, I'm pretty sure my mom has.
I think my question about it too is, was everyone dressed as E.T. or just
no? It was just me. They were doing, I don't know, they were doing some like probably silver unitards or something like space.
Space ballet kind of thing.
E.T. song, I don't know. But then, yeah, and then I came out and did the whole E.T. shtick as one does.
As a five-year-old.
Yeah.
Well then, when did you realize that that was a superpower that you possessed, that you knew how to get that out of people?
I mean, I don't think I really realized it until probably like junior high, maybe, you know, like when you use humor to, I would always do stuff at home and my sisters would laugh. So I would always be like doing crazy characters and stuff. So I knew that it made my family laugh, but that's probably it. Yeah.
All right, Kate.
I did this in high school. We did two musicals a year. We did like the big musical and then we did like a weird small musical because we had like so many people in the theater program in my high school that was like how we made sure everybody got a chance to perform. And, you know, everybody's like double and triple cast and all that stuff. And we did a show, an old Danny Kaye musical called 2x2. I don't know if you guys know it. I'm like, maybe in this crowd, people would know it. I mean, it's a comedy about Noah's Ark, like such a great source material for laughter.
I feel like there's a song in there called The Golden Lamb.
The Golden Ram. It's the Golden Ram. And it's sung by Goldie, who I played, who is a prostitute. Let's just be clear about what this actual plot is. She's a prostitute, but she's a member of like a religious cult. High school. I was 15 doing this. And I desperately wanted to play the sister. There's like a sister role who's like a romantic, she's like the ingenue. And I really wanted it and I didn't get it, which is actually how I ended up in comedy, is I always wanted to be the romantic pretty one and then I couldn't book it. So I started being the idiot instead so that at least I got to do something. But we had to sing The Golden Ram. And I remember at the time thinking, I don't understand how to, like, because it's a song about, like, it's all sexual innuendo. It's all about, like, I'll bring you to the light, but, like, all through sex, basically. And I'm 15 and doing this. I'm wearing a really inappropriate now headdress, like, gold, like, Egyptian-style headdress. There's photos out there.
Sure.
And, like, a sheet, basically, because it was, like, a toga. I don't know. But I remember like not knowing what to do because I didn't want to do any sexual innuendo because I was so uncomfortable. I was 15. And so I just clowned because I didn't know what else to do. And people laughed. And I was like, oh, I this is my way out. Like literally my way out of having to like be slutty. I don't know I don't remember what I was thinking at the time. But that was my like way of saving myself was to just like be a dum-dum and like, it was very, I played her very like philia, like, you know, like she didn't know what she was saying. Cause that was how I got out of having to like hit on this guy that was playing the guy in the scene that I didn't like and was uncomfortable around and was like, I don't know what to do. And so I acted like a dum-dum. And that was when I remember being like, oh, this is a useful tactic. This can get me out of a lot of stuff.
There you go.
Oh, yeah. As a defense mechanism, as a shield, how about you, Lisa?
I think for me, similarly, I mean, I never grew up like going for the laugh or my favorite musical was Les Mis, you know, like, I loved those shows. I always wanted to be the ingenue. And then by the time I got to college and really, I was like, I'm not the ingenue. I'm nowhere near the ingenue, you know? And so then I kind of had to figure it out. And I can definitely remember a moment that was great was I was auditioning for Sarah Jane in college, auditioning for Sarah Jane Mora in Assassins. And I did something, you know, that like, I was only a sophomore, and you know, typically in school, you know, like you don't get the, but I got the part, and I remember cracking the room up, and I was like, what? You know, oh, that's fun, and you know, so I really don't think that I started appreciating that really until college, until you know, I was halfway through my musical theater degree.
Right. Well, I just like this idea that it's kind of this light bulb moment that happens when you least expect it, that you go, oh, not everybody can do what I just did. I think that's very, very cool. So let me ask you, what, broad strokes even, what are your philosophies on playing comedy? What are your values when you approach a role that is meant to be funny or that you feel like you can infuse with some humor? What are your cardinal rules of that?
Ooh, for me, this is Lisa here. I don't know if there are any rules necessarily, but I think the comedy comes out of the, how serious they are about getting whatever that is that they want, you know, and whatever those choices are that they're making to get it. You know, I mean, it's just playing the reality of it, and then inherently it can be funny. No, I'm always going for more of a truth, but you know, right. Obviously in a musical theater comedy way, but you know, playing that in a kind of a real way and letting the circumstance make it funny at sure. most of the time. And then sometimes it's just pure shtick, but other than that, you know, but like for me, I just approach it as, you know, real.
Yeah, it has to be in truth, right? Or it won't land. Yeah. That's the God zone. No one's laughing if it doesn't feel authentic.
I know Kate and I have talked about this before, but comedy is so hard. When I get to do a drama, I am so relieved.
Yeah. That's so easy.
Comedy, dramas are so easy in a different way. But comedy is so hard, and I have expressed this, but it's like I get really angry when somebody, which happens often, will see something that I do and is like, oh, she's just a Fozzie Bear clown or whatever. It's like, I have worked out every single bit in my home for hours to make it look like we just came up with that. And I know that these ladies do too. I know that we all do. And so I get so angry when they're like, oh, she's just over the top and big. I'm like, well, that was my choice.
Right.
Yeah. I should have seen the 30 other ones that I didn't choose.
Yes. You have to make a choice in comedy. You cannot go up there and be waka waka because then it's
not funny.
No, it's right. not funny. So I get right. so angry when, especially people in our business, when they're so close-minded, they're like, oh, they could never do that. I'm like, I wish you could see how hard we work at home to make that choice. And if you want something different, then you need to tell us. But to assume that comedy is simple because you're inherently funny is not true. I know a lot of people that are really funny that are awful on stage at comedy. Yes. But they're great funny in real life. It's a totally yeah. different set. It's like, it really, we work really hard.
It's comedy is music. Comedy is a musical skill. It's you timing. Can't hear the comedy, and there's yeah. a lot of different styles of it. You know, there's every style, mm-hmm. just like there's a lot of genres of music, there's a lot of genres of comedy. But they are all musical. And if you mm-hmm. can't hear it, if you don't hear the rhythm and the lift and the fall and the flow, and then you will it will get ruined. And sometimes that has to be in the writing, for sure. Like some of the writing has to support that as well. And that's why comedians work so closely with their writers, because if my voice of, if my like hearing of the music of the comedy is different than what they were hearing when they wrote it, we're never gonna find, we have to work together to find it. But if you, comedy doesn't just happen. It isn't just shtick. It literally has to be, to use the most obvious one, like, but up, but up, but up, tink, but up, but up, but up, tink, but up, but up. If you can't find that, it will fail. And so there's a science to it. And that's what Leslie's saying. Is like, there's a practice and a rhythm that you have to walk this beautiful fine line with, because if you go too far, then you're just shticking. And if you don't go far enough, then you're not leaning into the music of it, and people won't be, you have to lead them to the laugh. And that takes finesse, it takes practice, and it takes a lot of work. And it's devastating when people are like, oh, it's just a comedy. And you're like, you should come, let me hear you be funny. Let's see you be funny on command.
Yeah, you have to dissect it all. You're absolutely right. You have
while you're singing, be funny. Like, well,
can I'm being very specific with you, Kate. I, every single time I saw the commercial of the for Mean Girls with the talking and singing at the same time, I'm so glad you brought up the musicality of that, because the cadence of that and the way that you pulled that off is next level hilarious to me. And every time that commercial came on the screen, do you guys know which one I'm talking about? I pissed my pants. How did you find that?
Commercial,
if you haven't seen it.
The good news is that I was handed writing by Tina Fey, and you're like, cool, don't do anything. It's perfect already. Just don't do anything and get in the way. It's flawless. But again, that was all, it's all the setup, right? That's why like the comedian is just the punch, but you need the other comedians there to set you up. Like if I hadn't had the two other women to set up the rhythm, then mine wouldn't have wouldn't have landed. It's there's so much community in comedy, and we had such a good community in that company and in those, you know, me and Ashley and Taylor and Erica too, when, you know, once she sort of took over for in the story, and Tina, like you have to have a company of people to be able to make that work. And I just get the fun of it because I get the punch, like I got all the fun.
Sure,
they had to do all the work and I got to do all the punchlines, which is lucky. And that was, I mean, it was actually music, which helps because, you know, like I went to college for music. That's like, I paid a lot of money to have a music degree. And rarely do I use that, but I do get to use it in the comedy part, which is lovely.
Kate, I had known you. I was gonna compliment Kate because I had known you for a while, and then I went and saw Mean Girls, and I remember sitting there like gobsmacked, being like, "How is this happening?" It was genius. I just thought every choice was genius.
My secret is, if it's not glued to the set, I will take it, and that's my comedy. If you don't want me to touch something, glue it to the ground. Otherwise, I will pick it up and walk away with it, and that is my comedy.
That includes cast members.
Right.
Sometimes. Yes.
Trombones.
Absolutely. Careful if it has wheels, I might push it off.
And that's what I'm looking for, frankly. What about the relationship between finding a moment, and your audience reaction? During a long run, when you've got material you've got to deliver over and over again, how much does the audience's reaction dictate how you will approach a bit or change it?
It can't really. I always like talking about comedy, like Kate said, music. I kind of look at it like science. And once I find that rhythm, it's frozen. My show is frozen. I will do the same thing because I know that that's what works. Obviously, you have to change it if you've got somebody different opposite you, and you change it, you know, a little bit. But for the most part, you really can't, because audiences are so weird. Some may not be laughing, but they're still enjoying it. I don't know. It's not that it's not fun, because you guys know. I mean, when people aren't laughing, you're like, oh, okay. But you still do the same thing, I think. I don't know.
I learned a really valuable lesson when I did Bring It On, because it was the first long stint. You know, we did Bring It On so many times and so many iterations, and the tour, which we did for 9 months, went directly into the Broadway, which we did for 6, and that was the first time I had ever done anything consistently in comedy. And I learned the hard way, because I did absolutely get wrapped up in my bits and get wrapped up in my moments, and I would notice that the more I elaborated on it, the less laughter I got. And I was like, wow, what's happening here? Like, why is this? And so I would drop back and I would be like, okay, stop doing everything. Just go back to what the text is. And immediately the laugh would come. And it's like that lesson was so important for me to learn, is that like, you cannot embellish. And Casey Nicola, God love him, who's like a master of musical comedy, he says, make things deeper, never make them wider. Because as soon as you start stretching as an actor, like the bit, the going for the laugh, inevitably the audience can see through you. They're smarter than that. And if you start to widen it, you ruin the rhythm and you look fake. So you just try to make it deeper, which keeps the timing, it keeps the pacing, it keeps all of the honesty.
It's truthful.
And just maybe informs it. And that is how you evolve in the long run, is it's just about making sure that all of that, it stays simple and it stays clean. You can inform it with more if you want, but you can't mess with the rhythm or people will know, and it ruins the whole thing.
I feel like I've heard so many times in the wings, actors coming off and be like, yes, I got that laugh tonight. Yes, I got him this time. Yeah, this is it. Ooh. Because there's such a dopamine rush with that, right?
It is. So, it's like doing drugs.
I think it is. I think it's a real mental focus thing to go, okay, I need to stay where I am, rather than, okay, that was good. Maybe putting a hat on top of that will be even funnier. And I've made my mistakes in that department a lot.
Well, that's another thing. They don't tell you that comedy involves restraint. They don't tell you that to be the dum-dum, you have to like be really strict. Like, you think that you can like flail and flail, and the larger you flail, the funnier it'll be. And you're like,
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about, I'm going to go to Lisa on this. in, let's take Les Mis, for example. Yeah, I know you've Thenardier'd in at the Muni, et cetera. When you're dealing with a piece where there's not a lot of comedy going on in the rest of the world that we've created, and you are coming in with that much needed relief for the audience, is that a pressure? Does that kind of affect the way you approach the material with that in mind?
For me, no, because it's just who that character is. It's how it's written. And again, it's truth and timing. Like basically this whole conversation is boiled down to that. And so it's in the material and trusting it, because their audiences, especially in a show like that, they're waiting for it. They're like, oh, you know, thank God, something funny, you know, yeah. Like, so honestly, you don't even have to work that hard. Right. Yeah. Just finding the truth of that and what makes them funny. What is that? And timing, you know, like whatever those bits or beats are, you know, but I obviously if it's a well-written show and it's the one comic relief moment, you don't have to do very much at all.
Just deliver it as you go back to the page. Yeah. What of your, in your comic performances, what is your proudest moment that you found in a character that was very funny in your mind?
Well, I don't know if it was necessarily the funniest, but what I loved doing the most was Spelling Bee, because it changed every night. I got make stuff up about the people on stage. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that, you know, like, so, and then sometimes if you couldn't specifically think of something for that, you know, person, I had like a laundry list of stuff I could use. And sometimes we would sit and, you know, the lights would be down and I'd see, and I'd think of a joke and I'd write it down and then they'd get up and it would totally bomb. And then I'd just be like this. It just wouldn't land at all, you know, but you're like, well,
we'll try this.
Everybody
again
on
tomorrow.
The bench, everybody on the bench is going, because nobody laughed, you know.
Yeah, oh absolutely.
You know, I'm Jay Reese, who played our principal Panch. I remember because he would write him too, you know, like as we would sit and try to think of stuff to say about the spellers and like he'll slide me a joke and I'll read it and I was like, no, I'm not saying that. And he's like, just say it. I'm like, it's not funny. Just say the line. And I said it and it bombed. I was like, see, you know, like this is all like on stage while the show is going on. But
I,
you know,
that.
It was fantastic, you know, getting to be up there and do that and play with the spellers in that way. And the things that were the funniest were things that, because we had to pretend that they were kids, you know, these adult guest spellers. And the things that were the funniest were, you know, ones that were rooted in some kind of kid truth. You know, because if they were just too off the wall or too, I don't know, it was a very specific thing that made them laugh, because we needed the audience to believe that they were also kids in the spelling bee. So anyways, I think that was the greatest of that, you know, genre time, improv and whatever.
What about you, Leslie?
I mean,
agree. Not necessarily the funniest in your mind, but what are you most proud of?
Oh, well, it was actually in Dames on Broadway, because it happened by accident. I sing this ridiculous, like, Himalaya. I'm on top of a mountain and I'm in this bonnet and Mona is supposed to, Randy had built, or the great Ana Luisa had designed this set with the mountain had a slide on it, and the original idea Randy said was that I was gonna sing and then go wee and then slide down the bottom of the slide and then awkwardly get up, and I was like, oh no. So in tech I shot myself down that slide, landed on my butt, and then bounced off stage, and I remember being like, that was a good choice. I'm gonna be in pain, but this was a great choice because it was so unexpected. And Randy Skinner is the sweetest man ever, but he doesn't guffaw laugh.
No.
He guffawed, and I was so proud that I made this man, and he was like, can you keep it?
And I said, oh, I can't. It's
Can I?
Okay. Yeah. He's well, like, don't, I want you to get hurt. And I was like, no, I got a lot of butt padding. So
you got to weigh some things out there. 8 times a week. Like, I'm willing to give this one for that moment. I love that. I'm mad I didn't see that, because that sounds like I want to bounce into it.
It's always that stuff, though, that happens by accident. That you know, it's a weird spur of the moment thing. Those are what I'm most proud of. Is I'm like, I don't know why in that moment I was like, oh no, we're going to hurl ourselves off the mountain. But it is that stuff that just happens.
Listen, and that's you had a mountain off which to hurl. What are you supposed to do?
What are you supposed to do?
Kate?
Gosh, I don't know. I'm having a hard time coming up with anything for this, because I'm like, what was the thing that I felt like, I mean, if I were to choose from Mean Girls, which is like probably the easiest to like come back to, I think, I guess, you know what? This is so dumb. And I can't believe I'm going to admit that this is the thing I'm most proud of maybe in Mean Girls. But we had this big number in the first act called Apex Predator. And Apex Predator is all about Regina and like the position she holds in the, you know, the food chain, so to speak. And in the movie, the moment that we were sort of referencing in the movie was when they all turn into animals in the cafeteria and they all like go after each other, which we didn't do. We didn't go that route, but we did sort of reference the animals in the behavior, and we were in the mall and we all had to do like animal stuff. And I will be really very honest, I was very lost. I was like, I don't know what to do with this. I don't know like how to, it was a long period of time where we weren't singing. And so, but like there was very important storytelling happening dead center, but we were all there and like kind of just milling around. And one day in tech, I was just, I think I like spirits were low, everybody was tired. And so I was milling around as a bird, like as like a, you know, penguin-y type, long-legged, awkward bird in the like off stage left, like barely on stage, because I was like, I don't know what to do with myself. And I thought it would be entertaining for the people on stage left to, like birds do, run myself into a glass. It was like a popcorn machine or pretzel cart. And so I did it truly just for them. And it cackled everybody on stage so much that I was like, well, I'm gonna keep doing this. I wonder how many days I'm gonna get away with this before Casey goes, hey, idiot, you're taking away from the plot, cut it out. Like it made a sound, but we're in the dark. I'm like, maybe nobody can hear. We made it all the way to opening night.
Stop.
And it stayed in the show. It was in the show until I left. And at opening night, I was like, I cannot believe this is in the musical. I can't believe I'm running into the furniture. Casey comes out to me and goes, I have been waiting since the first day you did that to tell you that that is the stupidest thing I have ever seen. And it made me laugh so hard. And I was like, Casey, I have been waiting since the day that I did that for you to tell me to stop running into the set. But it stayed. And I think because like it made people so happy when, you know, people are tired and people are hurting. Like doing a long run is hard. And so anytime you can bring joy to the people that are doing the thing and lift that spirit, like that's just as valuable to me as bringing the joy to the audience. And so I guess that is my favorite. And like there were times I got a big old ding because I ran into the wrong part because I was excited that day and I hit the corner and I got a big old goose egg on my head. And I mean, I broke it once because I hit the glass and the glass wasn't glass, it was plastic, and it cracked. I mean, all kinds of stupid shit. But It was intended just to make people happy, and it was enough that it made it into the musical. So I think that's the one.
this is not on my list of questions, but judging from the reactions everyone's having to this, have we all had, I did this, now I've hurt myself. In the name of the moment on stage.
Every day, I'm still doing it.
I'm doing it right now, yeah.
I think it's part of the sacrifice of comedy. If you really want to be a comedian, you have to be willing to take on some personal injury.
Yeah. I was really glad in Escape to Margaritaville when my pratfall carrying the wedding dress got cut. I was like, oh, thank God. My knee hurts. But I was willing. I was darn willing to do it. But I was really glad when it got cut.
Why did they cut it?
Well, they probably wanted to save me.
Well, that's nice. That's.
I have a nice pain addendum to my slide story. Here in Bucks County, they were unable to get the slide, and it's a staircase, and I'm still hurling myself down a staircase, and the backs of my legs are covered in bruises.
Stop it.
You know what that shows? Indomitable spirit.
Cover.
That's called commitment to a bitch. She's like, yeah. I don't need a slide.
That is.
I'll take some 90 degree angles all the way down.
All the way down. It makes it feel longer, doesn't it? I bet. what is the funniest thing that you've had to go through with an acting partner, a scene partner, that you've had to make your way through without completely breaking?
I'm terrible.
Where to begin?
This is Leslie. I laugh all the time on stage. I am terrible. If something sets me off, I scream laugh. It's all the time. I love other comedians so much that I'm often like, anytime I'm opposite somebody, it happens all the time. All the time.
I have one in this show that I'm doing now. I work opposite of Hunter Foster, and we play Clark and Ellen Griswold. And there, how do I tell the story without giving away too much? But like, there's a scene, there's an intimacy scene between he and I that it's a comedy, goes awry. And there's an exchange of dialogue that has to go back and forth very, very quickly. And we're still, you know, we're still workshopping the script, but every time we've done a run, there's a lot of sexy. I put that in air quotes for this podcast. A sexy happening, and I have yet to make it through this scene watching him do this, do his like sexiness without cracking. Not once. I have not done it once. And I would like to tell you that by opening here, we will get through that. And I can't promise that actually, because it is so funny. And I mean, Hunter, his comedy is so spectacularly genuine. It's just so honest that it is very, it takes me aback. Like I am unprepared for it every single time. It's also constantly different. He's like a very, he's a very quick thinking comedian. And so the bits come out and they just take a turn of their own. And I feel that it is my job to let him and to see how far he will go. And then inevitably he keeps going, and then inevitably I fall apart. And then we have to get the scene back somehow.
Do you just kind of hold out and be like, are you done yet, sir?
Oh, yes. I get frequent notes to like pick up the tempo of things just because I'm sitting there waiting to see what he'll do. And inevitably he won't stop. Like he'll just keep going. And I really think that once the audiences get here, we're going to realize that it's honestly better if we just let him go. Whatever I have to say can wait. We can just wait and let him do it.
Oh my God. Is there anything, and I feel like maybe I'll know your thoughts on this, but what is there anything specific in bringing something very funny to life in song versus in scene work or dialogue or monologue?
This is Leslie. For me, it's really difficult and because you have to be able, and I struggle with this all the time, but it's like you have to still be able to sing and still make the faces or do the things that you want to do with your body that isn't always conducive to singing. So for me, it's difficult, but that's why you have to work it all out first. Otherwise you won't be able to hit those notes. And it takes me a long time personally, but like it takes me a while.
I feel like it's the same process though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I feel like it's the same process.
Yeah. Leslie, I will say I work on the dance competition circuit, and we get to see a fair amount of louds performed, and I
forgive the
dancers all over the country, but every time you come on, I glaze over because I think that is just audibly one of the funniest things I've ever heard. It is so big in just listening to it. It makes me very, very, very
okay. Funny. It's the hardest thing I've ever sung. Hardest song. And after that 4-minute dance number that has everything in it except Killer Bees, it then to have to sing that was the hardest thing I think I will ever have to do in my life.
Well, you did it, and I appreciate it to this day. Going to you ladies personally, what makes you laugh? What in life do you find funny?
My career. No.
Well, thank God, because it's laugh or cry. You know, we're gonna laugh or cry. What tickles you? Nothing.
I think sincerity. Like true. I mean, and that's like not any different than what we were saying before. Like watching somebody be like shamelessly sincere is hysterical, because I feel like we as a society, we as people, we put on so much, you know, like there's so much like, this is my brand, and this is the version of me I want to put out in the world, and this is like who I want people to see me as, and all of, and I don't think that's a bad thing. Like I don't mean that in a negative way, but I think like when you watch somebody drop that for a second and something happens that is like just genuine, it can be both like heartbreakingly beautiful, but it can also be like earth-shatteringly funny. And I think that like that sort of just genuine action is almost always what, when it takes me about, you know, when it surprises me, like that's what makes me laugh.
The guard is down.
And yeah. And also funny animal videos like on Instagram and stuff.
Forget it. What I mean, what are these cats even doing?
When they knock shit off the table.
What are they doing? What are they looking at? Why are the birds dancing that way to that hip hop song?
And the dog, the howling dogs.
Yeah.
Oh, where the people play the chords underneath them to yeah. the pitches. I love it. Oh.
What makes you laugh, Leslie?
I mean, so much, but Muppets. The Muppets to this day have the best timing of any. I think I've learned all of my timing from the Muppets, like as a kid, and so as an adult, it still makes me scream laugh. Sesame Street and the Muppets, like if you watch it as an adult, it's hysterical. It's really smart and funny. So that makes me laugh. And animal videos. Mm-hmm. Yes, of course. Oh. Yes. Yeah.
What's the funniest musical out there?
Just Cats.
Cats. Yeah. I laughed. I cried.
It was better than Cats. for all the reasons they never wanted.
I mean, I love Book of Mormon. It's so wrong, and it makes me just laugh so
fast. Hard.
The joke. Drowsy Chaperone.
It's also so.
Drowsy Chaperone. I'll never get over that stupid stick bit. That is the dumbest thing I've ever seen on stage, and it is one of my favorite things I've ever seen on stage.
The dropping of the cane.
While you can. So dumb. So perfect.
That's hilarious. What do you think is the funniest one?
I have an answer.
No. I love them all equally. I'm gonna geek out on you now, Lisa, just for everyone who's listening, that if you have not done yourself the favor of going to watch Jenny's Blues from It Should Have Been You, go do yourself a favor and see a star turn that we've not to be believed. I gush over you now and forever, Miss Lisa Howard. My friends, thank you so much for talking to us today and guiding us through this comedy jungle cruise. I feel satisfied and more alive than I felt in a very, very long time. I'm going to take this with me onto my hip surgery bed. I'll be giggling as I count backwards from 10.
Oh God.
Good, I think.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
It's going to be great.
I'm going to have the whole world on a plate. Also, if any of you guys have any sort of fabulous costumey sort of cane that I could borrow, I'm looking for something that either conceals a sword or has some sort of orb or an owl on top. I would really be interested in that.
Yes. Or a bird.
Or a bird. Or Paul.
And you know what? There it is. You brought it all back full circle. That's comedy, bringing it back to birds. Well, my friends, we've got to fly, so I'm going to say thank you so much, my friends, and I love you more than my lunch. I can't wait to see you soon. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Hope your drink doesn't fall in the river.
Oh my God. Paul. Paul. Justice for Paul. Oh. Guys, that was terrific. Thank you so much.
So fun.
That was fun.
That was absolutely delightful. What, that's going to be a hell of a listen.
That was so good for the soul. Laughter is the best medicine, don't you think? I want to say thank you so much to Leslie and Kate and Lisa for being here with us on the Broadway cast. Remember to subscribe to the show, rate us, review us, tell all your friends about us, make sure the whole world is listening. You can also support us on Patreon. Become a Patreon supporter, join our family, and get exclusive behind-the-scenes contents only for you, our Patreon family. All right, until next time, this is me, your Broadway buddy, Ben Cameron, saying have a great show!